Welcome to Royally Screwed. My name is Chris Shearer, and it's my honor to take you on a tour through some of history's greatest, worst, and bizarre rulers. It's time for another installment of Were They Great, where we explore the reigns of rulers who were given the title The Great in order to determine if they really deserved that honor. In this installment, we're going to be looking into the rule of one of the most influential Roman emperors of all time, Constantine I. There's so much to be said about Constantine in basically all aspects of his life. He was the man who founded Constantinople, modern-day Istanbul, which would eventually alter the course of where his nation was ruled from. He helped pave the way for the Roman Empire to accept Christianity, which would then become the state religion of the empire. And that's just two of the highlights from his reign. Constantine's reign began with a very fractured Rome, which we'll learn more about in the background history lesson. He is the glue that truly helped Rome get its act back together after the crisis of the 3rd century. I did an episode over that whole ordeal back in episode 72 of the show, so you should maybe listen to that one if you haven't already, because this episode could be viewed as a vague sequel to that one. Look, I don't want to show my hand now, but Constantine has a lot going for him, and the only reason I could think of not viewing him as great is if you really don't like the Byzantine Empire or wish Rome had kept its pagan roots. But all of that is for you to decide by the end of the episode. So, without further ado, let's begin the story. We're going back in time to the Roman Empire in the early 4th century in Constantine I of Rome. Was he great? In the background history lesson, let's bridge the gap from the crisis of the 3rd century to the beginning of Constantine's reign. So, if you didn't listen to episode 72, let's give you the quickest rundown of Rome's weird time in the 200s CE. After a couple centuries of expansion and being the strongest kid on the playground, the Roman Empire had reached its zenith and could only start getting weaker. Germanic tribes had grown stronger and were constantly a threat on the northern border. The Sassanid Persian Empire was continuing to grow in strength and threaten Rome in the east. The military was very upset with the leadership in Rome and decided to assassinate Emperor Alexander Severus, replacing him with a soldier named Maximinus Thrax. This created several decades of short-lived military background emperors known as the Barracks Emperors. This instability in leadership was compounded with a massive pandemic that even beat out the heights of COVID-19. In 253, Emperor Valerian decided to name his son Gallienus as his co-emperor. This will be a big deal going forward, having two men in charge. Valerian mostly handled things in the east against Persia while Gallienus ruled in Rome. Well, when Valerian was captured in 260, Rome started falling apart. In order to pick up the slack, a Syrian king who ruled under Rome's authority started gaining power. He fought back when there was an attempted coup, and Gallienus put the king in charge of the eastern third of Rome. Well, when that king was killed and his widow Zenobia attempted to take control for her son, the powers in Rome started fighting back. Zenobia eventually seceded from Rome, ruling over the Palmyrene Empire, named after the city her husband had ruled over. Meanwhile, the legions in the western reaches of the empire also decided they'd had enough and seceded, naming Postumus, a military commander, as the leader of the new Gallic Empire. Rome would remain a fractured mess until 274 when Emperor Aurelian took power in Rome and started pushing back against the former lands that had seceded. He managed to wage war against both the Palmyrene Empire and the Gallic Empire, defeated both of them, and reclaimed the lands that had been lost to the empire. However, Aurelian was assassinated in 275, and Rome once more fell to the rule of the Barracks Emperors until 284 when Emperor Carinus was killed and Emperor Diocletian took his place. Diocletian realized that part of the root of Rome's problems was that it was way too big for one man to rule. So he quickly decided to name one of his allies, Maximian, as his co-ruler. For the sake of clarity in terms of power, Diocletian would be called Augustus while Maximian would be called Caesar. In 286, Maximian was also being called Augustus, with theories floating around as to whether or not he did this with Diocletian's consent. But even if it was a show of force on the former's behalf, Diocletian allowed it, and Rome was now with two leaders, Diocletian in the east and Maximian in the west. But conflict continued on, as it does in Rome, and the two Augusti decided that Rome needed to be further divided. So in 293, Diocletian and Maximian raised two men to the position of Caesar. Ironically, both were the two emperors' sons-in-laws. Maximian now ruled over Italy, the Iberian Peninsula, and Roman Africa. His Caesar, Constantius, ruled over Gaul and Britannia. Diocletian ruled over Egypt and everything east of Greece. His Caesar, Galerius, ruled over east-central Europe, the Balkans, and Greece. This system is referred to as the Tetrarchy. In 305, Diocletian and Maximian stepped down as co-rulers of Rome due to the former's failing health. Constantius and Galerius were now co-Augusti, but that meant they needed new Caesars as well. Well, things got tricky when Constantius died in 306. The emperor's troops decided, with the last wishes of the Western emperor, to name his son, Constantine, as the new Augustus. Well, Galerius had thoughts about this and refused to accept Constantine as his co-Augustus. So he declared Constantine as a new Caesar, while the title Augustus went to the man who had been serving as Constantius's Caesar, Severus II. However, the Tetrarchy was beginning to show that it wasn't the perfect ruling system after all. The four men in power started turning on each other, and Constantine was determined to be the last man standing. Constantine would begin his reign as a Caesar in the Tetrarchy, though technically he would have still proclaimed he was Augustus, but would die as the sole ruler of the empire. So let's look into the dramatic rise and seizing of power Constantine would show during the course of his life. Well, he started off on a very strong foot. Constantius I died in Eboracum, the Roman city that would eventually become York, England. Therefore, Constantine started ruling in the west out of Roman Britannia. He got to work using his father's image as a leader of Rome to rebuild military bases and roads. He also pushed back against the invading Picts, a group of tribes living in modern-day Scotland. After repairing Roman Britain and securing its safety, Constantine left for mainland Europe. His destination was Augusta Trevorum, the modern-day site of Trier, Germany, which was the capital of his quarter of the Tetrarchy. During the winter of 306-307, Constantine fought back the Germanic Franks along the Rhine River, thereby further securing the borders of the empire. Well, Constantine's early successes were all well and good for him, but not the other members of the Tetrarchy. Specifically, Constantine's rise to power was a problem for Maxentius, the Caesar in the east. Due to Constantine's belief that he was an Augustus, this meant that Maxentius was really the only guy calling himself a Caesar. He also viewed Constantine as illegitimate, both as a ruler and going off the possible story that Constantine's mother was one of his father's concubines. So, in October of 306, Maxentius declared himself Augustus. Galerius was not keen on this power play and ordered his actual co-Augustus, Severus, to take care of Maxentius's coup in Italy. Well, Maxentius was the son of Maximian, aka the guy who had commanded Severus's army before him. When Maxentius brought his father out of retirement for help, the Western legions rebelled against Severus and imprisoned him. Maximian then struck a deal with Constantine, where the latter would marry Maximian's daughter, Fausta, in return for the title of Augustus of the West. Constantine agreed to this, married Fausta, and then proceeded to not really get involved with Maxentius's rebellion. He instead decided to return to Britain while his troops protected the Rhine from the Franks. He even ordered the construction of a bridge over the Rhine at Cologne. Eventually, the rebellion was pushed aside when Maximian fell out with his son and Galerius proclaimed his ally Valerius Licinianus Licinius as the true Augustus of the West, with Constantine being demoted to Caesar once more. Well, Constantine, being true to himself, continued to call himself Augustus. In 310, while Constantine was off campaigning across the Rhine, Maximian spread the rumor that the Caesar of the West was dead. He took this opportunity to claim power in the West against Licinius. When Constantine caught wind of this, he crossed back across the Rhine to take on Maximian. Luckily for the true Caesar, the armies and citizens of the West were incredibly loyal to him and refused to serve the attempted usurper. So in July, after being forced from power and imprisoned by Constantine, Maximian hanged himself. After Maximian's death, Constantine's reign switched gears. Though he had always proclaimed himself as Augustus, propaganda in his part of the empire really began pushing his right to sole rule over all of Rome. A speech given in Gaul that year insisted that Constantine was descended from Emperor Claudius II, who ruled briefly from 268 to 270, therefore giving him even more legitimacy. The speech also mentioned how Constantine allegedly was visited by the gods Apollo and Victoria, the Roman personification of victory, who crowned him with laurel wreaths. Then, in May of 311, Galerius died. The Tetrarchy quickly began unraveling as Maxentius once more made a bid for power. Galerius's son Maximinus Daza also attempted to seize power in Asia Minor, aka Western Turkey. In order to solidify his own power, Constantine proposed an alliance with Licinius, in which the latter would marry Constantine's half-sister. In 312, Maxentius seized Rome in an attempt to further assert his power, which finally provoked Constantine onto full war mode. By this point, Maxentius's popularity was in a deep decline, and Constantine was only getting more popular as he swiftly made his way through Italy and captured several cities from Maxentius's control. In late October, Constantine's army met that of Maxentius just outside of Rome, where the latter outnumbered Constantine's army about 2-1. An important aspect, which I'll talk more about later, is that in this battle, Constantine's banner displayed Christian imagery, something very new and not seen before with a leader of Rome. Despite being outnumbered, Constantine managed to defeat Maxentius, and the latter ended up drowning in the Tiber River. In 313, Licinius married Constantine's half-sister, seemingly cementing their alliance. Licinius also defeated Maximinus Daza when he crossed the Bosphorus Strait, the strip of water that separates modern-day Istanbul into its Asian and European sides. This solidified Licinius's control over the eastern half of the empire, while Constantine controlled the west. Over the next few years, the relationship between the Augusti started collapsing, with them briefly coming to blows around 315. However, matters were once again seemingly settled, only for civil war to once more fully break out in 324. During this war, Licinius attempted to name his second-in-command as Augustus of the West. Unfortunately, Constantine, once more waving the banner of Christianity, swept in to crush both opponents. Licinius and Martinian, his alleged new Augustus of the West, were forced to abandon their lives in politics. However, in 325, Constantine accused both men of conspiring to kill him and had them hanged. The next year, he had Licinius's son, aka the son of Constantine's half-sister, killed to prevent any future troubles. So, in 326, after years of compromise and war, Constantine I became the sole ruler of Rome. Alright, let's move along from war to talk about the city of Constantinople, aka modern-day Istanbul, Turkey. But before we talk about Constantine and his brand new city project, let's talk about the history of that area and why Constantine chose it for his new capital. The earliest settlement at the site of Istanbul has been claimed to be a Thracian town called Lagos. The Thracians were a culture that lived roundabouts in modern-day northeastern Greece, Bulgaria, and the far western reaches of Turkey. Eventually, that settlement was either refounded or collapsed and was rebuilt into the city of Byzantion, which is more known by its Latin name, Byzantium. Greek legends say that it was founded by a Greek king named Byzas, but the leading theory nowadays is that it was once again a Thracian city named for a Thracian man named Byzas. Byzantium was founded sometime in the mid-600s BCE. The year 667 BCE was used by the ancient Greek historian Herodotus. But unfortunately, Herodotus just wrote a bunch of stuff we now know to be untrue, so this date is also heavily scrutinized. But that was good enough for Constantine because he celebrated the city's 1000th birthday in 333 CE. The city flourished due to its key location on the Bosphorus Strait, the only entrance and exit for the Black Sea into the Mediterranean. As Rome took over the Greek world, the city of Byzantium continued on much the same, just now under new leadership. In the 190s, during a time of very quick successions and infighting within Rome, the city was badly damaged. It was rebuilt and further fortified by Emperor Septimius Severus in 196 CE. It would then continue on as a port city until the 320s. As Constantine was beginning to fully reintegrate the eastern and western halves of his empire, he recognized Rome's need for a new capital city. Rome itself was too far away from the threats the empire had been facing over the past century, mostly in terms of the Persians to the east and the Germanic tribes along the Danube River in the center of the empire. Also, the eastern half of the empire was just overall better equipped in terms of wealth and resources. Constantine needed a city that could satisfy his desires for a new central stronghold. Byzantium was perfect for this role. It was located on a major trading route and situated right between the Danube region and the eastern borders of the empire. On top of that, it was incredibly easy to defend as it was on a peninsula. The three sides facing the water were incredibly fortified, and you had to march pretty far through Roman territory to reach the fourth. And even though it was technically firmly within the eastern half of the empire, the Bosphorus represented the crossroads between Europe and Asia, which made it feel more central than it truly was. Over the next 6 years, Constantine ordered massive construction projects to be held in his new capital, which was tentatively being called Nova Roma, New Rome. Chunks of temples from throughout the empire, columns, floor tiles, and other pieces of marble, were carved out and brought to help in the massive construction effort in Nova Roma. Constantine really wanted to make this a place worthy of being the new capital, meaning he also had to get people to want to move there. One of the major construction projects would end up being the Hippodrome, the sports arena for chariot racing. The stadium was designed to seat around 80,000 people, which was nearly double the seating capacity of the Colosseum back in Rome. The city square, which had previously been called the Tetrastune, was rebuilt and rebranded as the Augustium. Though this was after Constantine died, the Augustium would eventually become home to the Hagia Sophia Church. It's the really big church in Istanbul, you probably know it even if you don't think you do. And to really entice the public, Constantine issued for there to be free rations of food given out daily to the citizens of Nova Roma. On the 11th of May 330 CE, the city was finally renamed Constantinopolis, which means the City of Constantine, which we now refer to as Constantinople. In its early days, Constantinople was a bit rough compared to the old capital city. While Rome had the position of Praefectus Urbi, something akin to a mayor who oversaw all of the guilds of the city, Constantinople had a proconsul, which was more akin to a governor role that was also held by the leaders of the various provinces. The new capital would receive its own Praefectus Urbi in the 350s. Also, Constantine created a new Senate in Constantinople, though things didn't really work properly at first. For some reason, Constantine created this new Senate in the east while keeping the old Senate back in Rome intact. He lured over some of the senators with promises of free food and board, but it didn't change the fact that there were technically now two senates. Also, the Eastern Senate was much more akin to a city council than a government body with power over an entire empire. On top of all this, at least at first, Constantine's new capital lacked many low and middle-level politicians to oversee different government duties. Constantinople was prosperous, but it was not a true new capital city. In fact, it wouldn't actually be fully recognized as the new capital of the empire until the first Praefectus Urbi was named in 359 CE, and that was after Constantine's death. But the city would eventually thrive. It would become the center of the empire, even after Rome formally split in half into two separate nations acting vaguely in harmony. And obviously, after the collapse of the Western Roman Empire, the East would still survive with its capital being the shining beacon of Constantinople. It would continue to be further fortified over the years to protect it from other threats, like the Huns to the west and the many factions of Muslim powers who would attack from the east. And heck, even after the Eastern Roman Empire fell to the Ottomans in 1453, the latter still kept it as their capital, showing the importance Constantinopolis had for those who weren't even citizens of the nation who built it. Let's now talk about Constantine and Christianity. As I said, by 312, Constantine was displaying Christian imagery in his army as a sign that he was given his authority to rule Rome by the Christian God. But how did a man who was born a pagan come to be a Christian? Well, first we'll have to look at some of the history between Rome and the Christian people. Though this might come off as incredibly heretical, I don't care, my personal opinion is that Christianity was always an innately Roman religion. After all, Jesus was a Roman citizen. Decades before his birth, the province of Judea was brought into the Roman world. Sure, it was semi-autonomous under the dynasty established by King Herod, but it was completely under the thumb of the Roman Empire. Almost every Jew living in the first century would have been a Roman citizen, and Jesus specifically spoke out about the way some of the upper-class Jewish population had been corrupted under the influence of Rome. Every early place of Christian importance was within the empire. Rome had rules about new cults being introduced into the imperial cultural melting pot. This rule was that it was illegal. The only reason Judaism was semi-tolerated within Rome was because the religion predated the founding of the city. So this new cult/religion, and what is religion but just a cult with great advertising, was immediately viewed as illegal. Between Christianity's foundations and the life of Constantine, several emperors had made attempts to suppress or outright persecute the entire Christian population, which had slowly spread out across the empire. We'll skip over most of that to talk about the most recent wave of anti-Christian attitudes in the empire, the wave that occurred under Diocletian and Galerius. Diocletian viewed himself as this great reformer, returning Rome to a period of peace after the crisis of the 3rd century. This return to form meant that he wanted to return Rome to its early days as an empire, aka a period before Jesus. Under the advice of Galerius, Diocletian began purging Christians from Rome's infrastructure, starting with the military. In 303, when Galerius fully came to power as Caesar, he introduced further laws to persecute Christians en masse throughout the empire. These laws forced everybody in Rome to worship and sacrifice only to the Roman gods. Property from churches and temples to unauthorized cults was confiscated. For some reason, Caesar Constantius was not fully into the persecution, and he refused to enforce some of the laws within his area of control. Later Christian writings try to claim that Constantius was secretly a Christian, but there's no real proof for that. So I guess he was just more open-minded than the other members of the Tetrarchy. Constantine continued his father's policy of leniency towards Christians. Again, Constantine was born a Roman polytheist, not a Christian. No one knows for certain why the emperor decided to convert to Christianity. There are many legends surrounding it, though. Some people claim that his mother was secretly a Christian, though again, there's no proof of this. She wouldn't actually convert to Christianity until after her son did. A major story that's been spread within Christian circles says that Constantine received a divine vision from God, who told Constantine that he would grant the emperor victory over his rivals in the Tetrarchy if Constantine converted. When I was in Rome several years back, I heard a different story that I actually think has a bit of weight. A tour guide told a story about how Constantine was enamored with one of his female servants and wanted to sleep with her. This woman was a Christian. While she wasn't against getting with Constantine, she told him that they couldn't be together unless he converted to Christianity. So, he did. In 313, when Constantine and Licinius seemed to have figured things out before they began fighting again, the pair issued the Edict of Milan, which ordered for tolerance towards Christianity throughout the empire. As per usual, Constantine gladly helped spread this tolerance. Part of the reason the relationship between him and Licinius fell apart was because Licinius once again started persecuting Christians. Once he was the sole ruler of Rome, Constantine continued to support the church and even started letting Christians into the higher offices of Roman politics. However, on the opposite side of that coin, the emperor also slowly started to limit the power of Roman polytheism throughout his domain, a practice that would continue under his sons until Christianity was made the state religion. One of the biggest steps Constantine took with Christianity was the calling of the First Council of Nicaea. This council was convened in the summer of 325 to help create a unified vision for Christianity, among other details. Within the few centuries of its existence, Christianity had already begun to splinter into different factions over their beliefs. At this point in time, the main issue was over the divinity of Jesus. There were two main camps, the Trinitarians, who believed that God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit are and always were one being, and the Arians, different from the white supremacist Arians, who believed God existed and then created Jesus as a part of himself later. Under the Council of Nicaea, the Trinitarian view was decided as the correct path for Christianity, and the Arians were excommunicated. One of the key outcomes of the council was also the development of the Nicene Creed, which is a profession of faith that outlines the general views of Christianity that is still used by most Christian sects, though later arguments of wording would result in the split between the Western churches and the Eastern Orthodox churches. Oh, and also Saint Nicholas, one of the bases for Santa Claus, was said to be at the council, where a later legend would develop that he lost his temper and slapped an Arian priest. Constantine's life post-conversion to Christianity helped set Rome on a new path, and though he personally never bit the bullet to do it, his policies would eventually see Emperor Theodosius I sign the Edict of Thessalonica in 380, which would make the form of Christianity Constantine helped form with the Council of Nicaea as the state religion of Rome. So let's get down to the judgment of Constantine I of Rome, shall we? There's no way of going about this without saying that Constantine's reign set Rome on a completely new trajectory. While the empire was founded and formed under the guiding iron fist of Augustus, Constantine's reign would see Rome become something completely new while still being the Rome that had come before. Even from his first days in power, Constantine was able to prove himself capable. He helped rebuild Roman Britain's infrastructure and ensured peace and stability along the northern borders of the empire. On top of that, he proved he was worthy of staying in power throughout the turbulence of the first couple decades of his reign. He played things safe and diplomatic when his presence would only complicate things further, but was also willing to be decisive and powerful when he could see the path to sole power right in front of his eyes. While I personally don't think it was a good idea for Rome to go back to one ruler during the life of Constantine, because too much land and too many people ruled over by a single individual is never a good idea, he was actually able to handle that power responsibly. His ability to bring in new life to the empire should very much be noted. Several times before, emperors had thought about moving power away from the city of Rome, but no one had fully done so successfully. Sure, you had various capital cities during the Tetrarchy for each territory, but Rome was still the heart of the empire. And you could definitely say that Constantine didn't fully succeed here. Constantinople was never the capital during its founder's life. However, he did get the ball rolling with moving the capital away from Rome to a more strategic position. And it was because of Constantine's ambitions with Constantinople that its continued history would become even greater. As I said, it was further fortified over the centuries. Countless groups who sought to plunder Rome, both as the Roman Empire and the Byzantine Empire, would always fail when they finally arrived at the capital. Its prestige was felt throughout the empire. The city of Rome itself would soon be considered a backwaters settlement, which was only of historical importance because of its name, while the rich lived it up in the city of Constantine. And obviously, Constantine's relationship with Christianity would basically change the entire world. Again, he didn't make Christianity the religion of Rome, but he helped get things to that point. He helped Christianity develop into a more singular, cohesive religion, and we'll ignore the countless schisms that would happen later for now. And if Rome hadn't decided to force Christianity on all of its citizens, the religion would not have the massive global reach it does today. The Spanish wouldn't have brought it to the Americas. The Portuguese wouldn't have brought it to Eastern Asia. Europeans wouldn't have brought it further south into Central and Southern Africa. Okay, a lot of this was done through colonialism, and that's terrible. But you have to admit that Christianity wouldn't have become the world's largest religion if Constantine hadn't gotten on the Jesus train. So with all that aside, let's assign a grade for the reign of Constantine the Great of Rome. Now, I'm not one of those people who say, well, no one is perfect, so I never give out perfect scores, but I think Constantine falls just short of a perfect score. If he had actually been able to name Constantinople as the true capital of Rome, and actually made Christianity the state religion, I would consider otherwise. So for that, I'll give Constantine an A on the Were They Great grading scale. Not an A+, but it does tie him with Frederick the Great, who I have already considered one of the greatest greats of all time. Constantine passed away in May of 337 CE. Ironically, for a man who would become a great uniter of Rome, he created a new tetrarchy with his will. The empire would be ruled by three of his sons, named Constantine, Constantius, and Constans, yes, really, and one of his nephews. The empire would never be able to regain a singular ruler, although Emperor Theodosius I very briefly ruled over a unified empire in 395 until he died in the same year. After Theodosius' death, Rome forever remained split in two. The western half would fall in 476 CE, with the Eastern Roman Empire surviving for about another millennium. Its power would remain in Constantinople, forever bolstering the legacy of Constantine the Great. His strength and power would forever be remembered by further leaders, both secular and religious alike. The future Byzantines owed Constantine for their capital city. Charlemagne recognized Constantine as one of the most powerful Christian rulers to exist. Medieval popes started spreading the story that Constantine had actually granted power over the western half of Rome to the church, which is why they held power over all the kings, and definitely not just because those kings were Christian and the pope was head of that religion. I don't know what else I could possibly say to get you to agree with me that, yes, Constantine was great. Also, as a final fun fact, just in case you wondered how we get from Constantinople to Istanbul, it's a relatively easy through line. Once Constantinople really made it big, the local population, who mostly spoke Greek, started referring to it as Ipoli, meaning the city, and sometimes even as Stinpoli, or in the city. When the Ottomans conquered the city, they took that latter phrase and Turkified it, is that a word, from Stinpoli to Istanbul. But for now, that's it for this week's episode of Royally Screwed. I hope you enjoyed the journey. Be sure to subscribe to the show and tell a friend all about it. So, at the end of this, I want to say that this episode wasn't actually supposed to be a Were They Great episode, but I was too far into things when I found that out, and luckily it worked out because Constantine is known as Constantine the Great. But I got things confused because the next episode was always supposed to be another Were They Great. So you're getting back-to-back Were They Greats. We're moving from Rome to their ever-classic rivals, the Persians. Specifically, we're going to look at the man who put Persia on the map, the first emperor of the Achaemenid Persians, Cyrus the Great. I hope you'll join me then for another topsy-turvy look into history's most interesting rulers.